Okay, so I want you to picture something. It's February 2026. You're standing on a sidewalk in Arlington, Texas. And on your left, you've got a crew literally welding manhole covers shut, getting ready for race cars to fly by at 200 miles per hour.
Right.
And on your right, there's a huge billboard for the World Cup. But then you walk, you know, maybe three blocks into a quiet neighborhood, and you see a for sale sign on a school. A school that's been the heart of that community for, like, 70 years.
It's a fascinating dissonance, isn't it? We've been looking through this stack of sources from Arlington today, and if I had to pick just one word to describe the city right now, it would be acceleration.
Acceleration is the perfect word, and not just because of the race cars, literally.
Oh, not at all.
It feels like the whole city is just hurtling toward this huge global identity, you know, FIFA, IndyCar. But the G-force from that acceleration is putting a real strain on the local everyday stuff.
That's it, exactly. And that's our mission for this deep dive, right?
Sure.
To look at both sides of that coin. Mm. We need to unpack the engineering marvel of turning a daily commute into a formula-style track.
And the medical breakthroughs happening in local clinics.
And then the very, very real human cost of closing a neighborhood school.
Yeah.
Something like Blanton Elementary.
It's a lot to cover. We've got 150 years of history, billions in tourism, and a water-sniffing dog named Splash.
You can't forget Splash.
Never. But let's start with the noise. The Grand Prix of Arlington. This isn't just a race. It's a massive civil engineering project. The sources call it the roadway to raceway concept.
Which sounds incredibly catchy, but from an engineering standpoint, it's a nightmare to pull off.
Really?
Well, think about it. City streets and racetracks are designed for completely opposite things. A city street is built for drainage, for durability at 40 miles an hour.
Sure.
A racetrack needs to be perfectly flat and grip ready for speeds five times that.
Right. I was reading about Graham Associates, the firm doing this. They're not just repaving. They're essentially rebuilding the whole geometry of the road. And what I found kind of ironic is that the track layout itself, it's not entirely new.
No, and this is a great connection.
Yeah.
The track uses roads like Randall Mill Road.
Yeah.
And the man who helped design those roads in the first place, years ago, was Jeff Williams.
Wait, the former mayor?
The very same. The former mayor who also happens to be a civil engineer.
No way. That is some incredible foreshadowing. Imagine laying out a utility grid for, you know, minivans, and two decades later, you're watching an IndyCar hit the apex on that exact same turn.
It speaks to the long game of infrastructure. You don't get a Grand Prix by accident.
Yeah.
But there's a detail here I think is worth dwelling on. When they say roadway to raceway, it implies they could just switch back and forth.
Right.
But the logistics of that, I mean, the barriers alone, miles of concrete and fencing, they have to be modular. They have to go up and come down without destroying the city.
And the surface itself. You can't have a pothole at 200 miles an hour. That's not a bump. That's a launch ramp.
Exactly. So the precision this requires just elevates the entire city's standards. But, okay, why do it? Why go through all the disruption and the expense? And that brings us to the Rodney Dangerfield aspect of the Arlington economy.
No respect. That was the quote from Brent Darad, the CEO of the Convention and Visitors Bureau. He says, tourism is the industry that gets no respect.
Which is a fair point. I mean, if you live in a tourist town, you mostly just see the downsides. You see the traffic on game day, the crowded restaurants.
The construction.
All of it. It's easy to feel like the city is being built for them, not for us.
But Darad drops a number that kind of stops that argument in its tracks. 16.3 million visitors last year.
And more importantly, they spent $3.1
billion. $3.1 billion. Now, it's easy for our eyes to glaze over at a number like that, but let's break down what that actually does for, say, a homeowner in Arlington.
This is the crucial part that gets missed. In Texas, there's no state income tax, so cities rely heavily on property and sales taxes. When a visitor comes in, stays at a hotel, they pay a premium tax on that room. They pay sales tax on dinner.
And that money goes into the city's general fund.
Which pays for the police, fire department, trash pickup.
I think I've got all the basics.
Right. So Gerard's argument is, if you took away those 16.3 million visitors, the cost of running the city doesn't just go away. The residents would have to make up that difference to keep the fire trucks running.
So in a way, the tourists are subsidizing the cost of living for the locals.
Significantly. It's a trade-off. You accept the traffic jam on Sunday because it saves you a tax hike on Monday. And that trade-off is about to get tested like never before because we are looking at the summer of 2026.
PIFA. The World Cup.
9 matches.
I looked this up, by the way. 9 matches is a staggering number for a single host city. Most cities get 4, maybe 5 games. Getting 9, including a semifinal, is it's just absurdly high.
It is. They're projecting 2.7 million visitors for just that event window.
Wow.
To put that in perspective, that's roughly the population of Chicago passing through Arlington in just a few weeks.
That is a logistical stress test that I don't think we can fully wrap our heads around yet. But it's interesting to see how this visibility is changing the city's reputation in the business world, too. The convention center rankings, they jumped massively.
From number 57 all the way up to 29 in Cvent's list. That's a signal that meeting planners, the people deciding where the big corporate money goes, are starting to see Arlington as a first-tier destination, not just a suburb of Dallas.
It's growing up. But a city isn't just about the future, it's about its foundation. And 2026 is also the 150th anniversary,
yeah,
the sesquicentennial.
It's a year of looking back while sprinting forward. And there's a lot of history there that surprises people. For instance, the National Medal of Honor Museum just won the Best New Museum Award from USA Today readers. That's national validation.
And speaking of history, I have to admit, I got a real kick out of the fun facts section in here. Usually that stuff is so dry, but the bit about the telephone operators in 1911, it really paints a picture.
The teenage boys.
Yeah. Apparently the first operators were teenage boys, but they all got fired because they lost patience with the callers.
Which, if you've ever spent time with a teenage boy, is not entirely shocking.
Right. Can you imagine? Operator, connect me to the general store. Ugh, just walk there, I'm busy. So they hired young women instead.
It's a funny anecdote, but also reflects the labor dynamics of the time, doesn't it? Telephony was high-tech then, and it's interesting how the face of that tech shifted from male to female for those customer service roles.
True. And then there's the Six Flags note from 1961. We think of theme parks as these wallet-draining things now, but back then, $2.75 for an adult ticket.
And that was for everything.
Yeah.
But the detail that got me wasn't the price. It was the outdoor air conditioning in the waiting areas.
That sounds like science fiction for 1961.
It shows that even back then, Arlington's whole business model was, how do we make people comfortable enough to stay and spend money in the Texas heat?
From misting fans in the 60s to retractable roofs on stadiums today.
The battle against the climate is a constant theme.
And among all this huge infrastructure, you have individuals keeping history alive, like Barbara Mott and her 1936 Packard. It's just,
right.
It's nice to know that while the city is building tracks for IndyCars, someone is still lovingly waxing a 90-year-old car in their garage.
It creates a layered identity. A city needs those layers. If everything is brand new, it feels sterile. You need the Packard sharing the road with the IndyCar, you know?
Yeah, agreed. Okay, I want to shift gears. Pun definitely intended to, something that impacts people on a much more personal level. The reporting on healthcare in this issue was surprisingly deep, specifically prostate cancer treatment.
Yes. This section with Dr. Peter Lanasa was fascinating.
Yeah.
I think for a lot of us, when we hear radiation, we still think of the old school approach.
Which was what? Just blasting the general area and hoping for the best.
Essentially, yeah. A shotgun approach. You aimed at the cancer, mm-hmm. but you inevitably hit all the surrounding tissue. And with the prostate, that's a huge problem because it's sandwiched right between the bladder and the rectum.
So curing the cancer often meant causing permanent damage to other organs.
Exactly. But Dr. Lanasa describes the new standard, which is IMRT intensity modulated radiation therapy. And they're using a technology called RapidArc.
The way he described it really made sense. Instead of a static beam, the machine rotates 360 degrees around the patient.
Think of it less like an X-ray and more like a 3D printer, but with radiation. It's sculpting the dose. Mm-hmm. It can make the beam intense right at the tumor and weak at the bladder wall, all in the same rotation.
That's incredible precision. But they've taken it a step further with this hydrogel spacer thing, space OAR.
This is the part that's just brilliant. The problem with the prostate is it moves. And it sits millimeters away from the rectum. So doctors inject this gel space OAR or Barrigel between the two organs.
It physically pushes them apart.
It creates a buffer zone. It just pushes the rectum away by a centimeter or so, enough that the radiation drop-off happens in the gel, not in the healthy tissue.
That is such a simple mechanical solution to a complex biological problem. Just move the organ out of the way.
And the result is the side effects just plummet. Dr. Lanasa said men are getting treated in 5 minutes and going straight back to work or to the golf course. It turns a life-altering treatment into a minor daily errand.
That's the definition of progress. And we saw similar themes of, you know, personalized care with women's health services.
Right, the all-female OBGYN practice. It's less about a technology and more about the psychology of care.
Yeah.
The buy women for women model addresses that feeling patients so often have of not being heard.
Trust is a medical tool just as much as a scalpel is.
Absolutely.
But we have to pivot here. We've talked about the boom, the billions, the history, the healing. But there is a shadow side to this growth. We have to talk about Blanton Elementary.
This is the hardest part of the source material to read, honestly. Amidst all the celebration for 2026, you have a neighborhood school built in 1956 that is shutting its doors for good.
And the reasons they give are this classic death by a thousand cuts, declining enrollment, a crumbling building, and an F rating on state standards for 3 years straight. A perfect storm, they called it.
But we have to look beyond the spreadsheet on this one. Closing a school is not like closing a Starbucks. A school is the anchor of a neighborhood. And the testimony from that school board meeting, it just captures the pain so vividly.
The grandmother's testimony really stuck with me. She was talking about her autistic granddaughter. For that child, the walk to Blanton isn't just a commute. It's her ritual. It's her stability.
And her fear was just palpable. How will she get on a bus with kids she doesn't know? That's a specific, terrified question that a billion-dollar tourism budget just can't answer.
And the student who spoke up, calling the school his second home, it's just heartbreaking. But I want to unpack something the board president, Justin Chapa, said. He said, "We had many Blantons."
That's the haunting line, isn't it? We had many Blantons. It implies this isn't an isolated failure, it's a systemic problem. When a city grows as fast as Arlington, resources tend to flow toward the new shiny things. The entertainment district, the older infrastructure, the Blantons, they get left behind until they're too expensive to save.
The paradox of a boomtown. You can build a Formula One track, but you can't keep the roof fixed on a 1956 elementary school.
It forces a really difficult question.
Here.
What's the metric of a successful city? Is it the number of tourists, or is it the viability of your neighborhood schools? The board isn't the villain here. They're managing a shrinking budget.
Yeah.
But for those families, the loss is total.
It's a heavy reality, and I think it's important we don't just brush past it. This is the texture of a real city. It's not a brochure. It has triumphs, and it has scars.
And sometimes those things sit right next to each other.
Which brings us to the challenge of transitioning. How do we even move on from the heartbreak of Blanton to the rest of our outline?
Well, I think we have to embrace the theme of the month, which is contrast. We've talked about the heavy, so let's look at the eclectic. Because right alongside the school closures and cancer treatments, you have a dog named Splash.
We have to talk about Splash. This might be my favorite detail in the whole stack. Splash is a canine working for the city.
But not a drug dog or a bomb dog.
No. Splash smells chlorine. He detects water leaks.
It's brilliant. He was adopted from the shelter, and now he just walks around sniffing for underground pipe breaks. He saves the city water, saves money, and he gets to be a working dog.
It's such a pure example of creative problem solving. We have a leak. Send the dog.
It actually fits the energy of the month. February 2026 isn't just any month. It's the start of the year of the fire horse.
Now, I usually check my horoscope for fun, but this one seems oddly specific.
It's very specific. The year of the fire horse only comes around every 60 years. In Chinese astrology, it's associated with speed, bold action, and chaos. It's about breaking free from old patterns.
Which is almost spooky. You've got the Grand Prix speed, the school closure breaking old patterns painfully, the World Cup prep bold action. The entire city feels like it's vibrating at this fire horse frequency.
It really is. The fire horse energy is high octane. It burns bright, but it can also burn things down. It's a time of transformation. And you see that eclectic energy in the cultural calendar, too.
Right. You can go see a Jane Austen exhibit, Trust for the Drawing Room, which is all about restraint and manners.
And then immediately drive over to River Legacy and see the Art and Science of Arachnids, which is the largest touring spider exhibit in the country.
Which is a hard pass for me. I will take the Regency gowns over the scorpions. Thank you very much.
But that's the mix. High culture, nature, sports, history, and food. We can't forget Patrick Hicks at Smoke and Ash BBQ.
A James Beard semifinalist. That's a huge deal.
And two Michelin recommendations. Texas BBQ has always been good, but getting that kind of global culinary recognition, it's just another level, another signal that this city is maturing.
So when we step back and look at this whole picture, the 200 mile per hour cars, the 3D printed radiation, the closing school, the water sniffing dog, what's the takeaway? How do we make sense of this jumble?
I keep coming back to a concept from the publisher's note in the source material. Garrett Martin talks about loving where you live, but he frames it a little differently. He argues that a city isn't built by the billion-dollar stadiums.
They're the stage, but not the play.
Exactly. He calls the residents the co-creators. The people running the festivals, the teachers at Blanton, the grandmother at the board meeting, Barbara Waxinger Packard, they're the ones turning a geographic place into a human space.
That's a powerful distinction. The World Cup is a rental event. It comes and then it leaves. The co-creators are the ones who remain.
And as Arlington rushes forward with this firehorse energy, the real challenge is going to be ensuring that the co-creators don't get run over. A city that builds racetracks needs to make sure it's also building or at least maintaining its schools.
We can enjoy the speed, but we have to look out for the passengers.
That is the balance.
So here's our thought for you to chew on this week. Whether you're in Arlington or you're watching from afar, look for that contrast in your own community. Where's the firehorse energy, the new, the fast, the bold? But also, where are the Blantons, the things that are struggling to keep up?
And who are the co-creators trying to bridge that gap?
Exactly. Keep your eyes open. And if you smell chlorine where you shouldn't, call Splash.
Definitely call the dog.
Thanks for listening to this deep dive. We'll see you next time.